Hi friends, Erica here, and I wanted to let you know that today's episode is sponsored by my friends over at YM Dental Lab. They are offering 2 free zirconia crowns for all new customers. Check them out at ymdentallaboratory.com for more information. Now, on with the show. Friends, before we dive into this week's episode with my guest, Tessina Bullock, an appeal queen, I want you to prepare your heart because she is going to drop some serious knowledge on inside workings of insurance companies and the appeal process, how to win. I have to admit, I like her method better than mine. So I'm going to ask you to have a pen and paper ready because she's going to walk you through step by step how she wins 100% of her appeals. Now, on with the show. Tessina Bullock, welcome to the Dental Billing Podcast. It's such a pleasure to have you here. I have been excited to do this interview because I just recently learned about your appeal process, and we're going to talk about that in today's episode. Before we do that, I just wanted to introduce you to my audience. You are the president of Verus Insurance Verification, and you guys do verification for offices all over the country, and you have a very simple process. You make it very easy for your clients, and I can appreciate that. Can you walk us through your journey in dentistry? Talk to us about how it started, how it's going, and all the things. How did you become a dentalpreneur?
Yes. Well, thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited for this opportunity. And I've been loving just getting to know you and everything that you do. So this is an honor for me. So thank you for having me. Where did I start in dentistry? I mean, this could be a long story.
That's okay. If the listeners could have been a fly on the wall before we actually hit record, Tess and I have been talking about all things dental for at least we started at 9 my time, and it's 10:03.
So got carried away.
We did.
So yeah, I got started in dentistry probably back in like 2007 or 8. And I was a single mom at the time. I had a little girl. I had just become a single mom. And I was like, how am I going to take care of her? And I was waiting tables and working all the late nights, weekends, and everything. And I was making fine money with tips, but I just never got to see my daughter. So I was like, what career? What can I go into? What can I do that has like no nights, no weekends, no holidays? And I'm out here in Utah, and dentistry just marked all of those points in Utah. I'm not always for all states, but in Utah, they don't work late nights and holidays. Right. So I just, that's how I started. And I went to school to be a dental assistant, started in dental assisting. Quick backstory, my father, he's a huge entrepreneur. He would rescue failing businesses of all sorts. Wow. And was very high stress, managed a lot of things. And I would watch him and I'd be like, I am never going to do that. He is so busy and it's so much. And I just like want to go to work, do my job, go home, have fun. Like, right? I'll never do that step. So I was starting out in dental assisting. And back then, especially, it was a little bit more flooded, really hard to get your skills trained. And so I didn't do a ton hands-on because the offices had that, but what they were short in was front office. And so they were like, okay, we're going to kind of train you in both. We'll let you get some of your skills down, but help us out up front. My father had taught me my whole life how to communicate with people, how to profile people. Side story, he's also in the CIA or was in the CIA.
Right.
So profiling people and how to communicate with people was something that I had just been learning my whole life. So they put me up front and I was more successful than they had ever imagined me being, and more successful than I had intended to be, you know?
Right. And side note, I just want to interject there because yeah, people skills matter.
Yeah, they do.
When you're in front, people skills matter. And
so much.
We have a lot of individuals in the front that need better people skills. And yeah. I think that dental business owners need to understand that you've got to have your people in the right seat.
Yes. And I've done that a lot in consulting where I've gone in and have restructured who they have where, because yes, sometimes they have the gal up front that doesn't want to talk to people, doesn't want to have anything to do with people. And then the girl that is really good with people back doing insurance verification. Right. And I'm like,
Exactly. Yeah. And it's not, I'm not knocking anybody that is introverted and it takes more energy to interact with people, because it does, definitely. Right? Like when sometimes for me, it's very easy. Public speaking comes very easy for me. It doesn't stress me out, but for other people, it would. Now, if you put me in front of a computer all day, it's going to stress me out. I have to interact with people, and vice versa. There are individuals. So please, to those of you that are listening to this, I am not knocking anybody that is an introvert. I'm just saying sometimes we put our people in the wrong seat.
Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with it, but they're not comfortable in that position either. They would be happier being in a different position. So give them that opportunity to find out where they shine and what they're comfortable with, because they're going to be super stellar in the computer stuff or in these other aspects. There's everybody has their unique gifts and talents. Yes. Find out what they are and use those, right? Yes.
Tap into that. Like Tessina and I mean, we're like tangent city. So we will go off. So, okay. Going back to your journey in dentistry, now you're working in the front office.
I'm working in the front, super successful. They bumped me up to like an assistant manager. And then I leave that practice and I go and become a full manager at another practice. And being the full manager at this practice, coming into it, things were a mess. Their AR was a mess. Their insurance was a mess. Like there were so many things and I just wanted to fix it all. And getting into the insurance, nobody trains you for this. Nobody teaches you for this. Sometimes it's what somebody else says. And I was calling insurance companies and fighting some of these claims and these way old claims that have not been paid in forever and all these things. And the insurance company kept saying to me like, this is how it's done. And we have the control and you have no control. And I don't deal well with that.
Friends, she is a disruptor. Let me just say.
Disruptor. And I'm sorry. And again, Again, I was taught and raised and trained that we have rights, we have protection, we have, like, you know, and like, I'm the boss.
Yes.
And so I'm like, says who? And they're like, says me. I'm like, but says who? Like, who says to you that you're in charge? And who says to you that you can take this from my patient and tell my patient that they have to pay when they're paying you a premium? I'm like, is it a covered service? Is it this? Is it that? So I just started getting really overly like aggressive towards the insurance companies, noticing that they were these huge bullies and they were just bullying the heck out of all my patients who I dearly loved and had gotten really close relationships with. And then these insurance companies are just bullying them. Mm-hmm. And I didn't like it. And who's going to protect them? I decided I was going to protect them. I don't know.
I love that. And I want to pause there because I kind of want the audience to anticipate your process, because you have a very unique process to the appeal, well, actually to the appeal process, and very different from mine. And I love when I learn new things from other billers in the industry. And I truly believe that your process is way better than mine because it's quicker, it's faster, it yields a result a lot faster. So I'm really, really happy that we can share your process. But before we get into that, I want to go back to how you became your office manager now. So fast forward, now you are a dental business owner. You're a dentalpreneur. So you're like me. We started as dental assistants
and now we are
dentalpreneurs. So, talk to the individuals who are one day hoping to have their own dental business. Other people like us that started as dental assistants and now we've moved into an entrepreneurial space. Talk to us about that And then we're going to get into that lovely
process
that you have.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. So definitely when I was learning some of these things that I was learning, I went through to find out all the laws, all the legalities and all these little things. And I thought there was so much more that I didn't know. So my journey started out just wanting to learn, wanting to know. I thought I was behind where everybody else was. And I started joining study clubs or finding friends and finding groups. And there's this big, like, oh, you can't talk to the other office's office manager. And I don't know why. I didn't like that. I was like, why would we not talk?
There are so many common, like, these preconceived notions or these misconceptions in dentistry. I don't know why we create these barriers within our communities, but we do.
We do. And it was really bad back then. I think it's gotten a lot better now. You can see there's all these Facebook groups and people are talking and coming together, and that's how we learn and that's how we grow. Back in the day, because I'm a little old, right? But back in the day, that wasn't a thing. You weren't talking to each other. And so I found this group of gals that was amazing, and they were doing a study group, and they let me, they were so nice to let me join in with them on like their board or whatever, you know. Aww. So we would host the study clubs together and invite everybody in, and it'd be open communications. And I quickly started finding out that I wasn't actually as behind as I thought I was. I was actually ahead in my efforts to hurry and catch up and learn as much as I could and go do this extra research. And what are my laws? What are my rights? Who do I battle? All these things. And I go to the study clubs and nobody else knew any of that stuff. So I just started sharing it in study club settings. We started doing seminars and inviting people to come to our study clubs and started meeting all of these other people in the dentalpreneur world and networking with them and getting those opportunities where all of a sudden they would connect with me and be like, you should join in on this. You should be doing this. And
what was the title of your seminar?
Our little group was the U-Dolls Study Club. But U-Dolls, it was like Utah Dental. Yeah, U-Dolls. And we had our little study club. And there's ADOM, you know. Mm-hmm. So we had actually gone as far as becoming an official Utah chapter of ADOM. It was tons of fun. And so they gave us some support. We went out to the Utah Dental Convention. So they have their conventions every year. And we would go with Patterson and we'd have our own little booth and sign up people to come out to the study clubs so that we could share information together. So it just started with all that networking of getting to know all these higher up people, all these people who are already doing it. And they were so welcoming. And so, like you and I are saying, let's say to these other people, like, we are not in competition with each other.
No.
We are all,
oh my God,
we're all here to help each other, right?
Yes.
So they were like, come join me on this project, or you should help with this project. And I have a client for you over here. And it just spiraled out of control.
And I think the takeaway and this part of your journey for those in the audience that are listening is networking is key. For anybody that is looking to start a business, whether it is a dental practice, whether it's a dental billing business, I heard this today. I follow a few entrepreneurs, podcasters, and one that I'm huge. I listen to the Jasmine Star Show. I love Jasmine. And today, just this morning, she said, you are one ask away from everything you want. She was referring to network.
Yeah.
It is so true. It is, I have a story behind that I won't share now, but it is so true. So I think the takeaway here is networking is key.
Yeah, definitely. And so it just started spiraling, and I didn't do insurance verification where I did all this other consulting. But as you know, Erica, it always goes back to like, what breakdown are you getting? That's like the starting point. And Ben Tunay, right? He reaches out and he's like, he was one of these great networking colleagues. We've worked on so much together, and he has his own, you know, nationwide company. Mm-hmm. He is getting his clients all the time. And when they ask questions to him about consulting or, you know, issues that they're running into with their office claim wise that he doesn't do because he does the fee negotiations, he would reach out to me and we'd go back and forth. And then he said, why not do an insurance verification company?
Right. And that's
typical Ben, right? Like we know Ben.
So typical Ben.
he is a serial entrepreneur.
And yes.
He has a company called Veritas, and they are a PPO negotiation company. And I have worked with many of their clients. In fact, with my company, Hidden Dental Profit, and his company with what we do and what he does, we have crossed paths with many mutual clients.
Yeah.
And, it's just been interesting, but you and Ben now have Veris, and
yes,
that is the insurance verification company. So talk to us a little bit about what you guys do and how you serve your clients there.
Yeah, it's super fun. Insurance verification seems like it could be the easiest thing to do, but we all know it's not. It's not the easiest thing to do. It is the most annoying thing to do. So most offices, even if they have a good breakdown form, what I find, and you might find the same thing, is that they're not actually filling it out in its entirety. So even if they have a great form, they're calling and they're in a hurry. They have a patient waiting, they have the phone ringing, and they have to get this. So they default down to just the few basics that they absolutely have to have to get that patient going. And they don't fill out all of the extra questions, even if they have a great form. Normally, I find that their form is missing questions, but even if they have a great form and I go look through a couple that they've done, they're not filled out in their entirety. And the common thing is, I just don't have time. I had to wait on hold for an hour, or I can't get the website to work, all of those things. And sometimes that information, there's some information for insurance companies that is global wise, right? Like Delta Dental, you don't have to ask or call or go to the website. You just know that all Delta Dental plans for SRP are only 2 quads per day of service. That's not all 4 quads same day. So those things, like those global rules, I have this masterful document.
Yes.
That has all of the insurance companies and all of their little global rules and things that I know across the board for that company, that's what they follow. So I have that document that I had created.
And that
for me.
Helps your verification team.
Yeah.
To
so they use that. Yeah. So offices, again, they just don't have time. Like even if they know or they kind of remember, sometimes those details get mixed up as to which company was which, because they don't actually have the documents to it or the proper updated references, and they don't have the time to go through that.
Right.
So we train the verifiers on all those expert tips and of like what those global notes are, how to properly utilize the websites to find the additional information that's hidden, and what specific questions to ask the representatives if you have to call in, all of those expert tips.
Yes.
Into verification. And then they can get your whole form filled out. They're asking all of those extra questions, and they're still doing it in a really fast time for a really low cost.
I mean, talk to the audience. I think that you're very affordable and it's a very thorough breakdown. Talk to them a little bit more about, you know, what is the fee for insurance verification with your company?
Yeah, it is $15 an hour.
So one of the things I wanted to point out as I look at billing departments, and I do take a look at the breakdown, which is why you and I connect. We believe that the revenue cycle is kicked off with a really good breakdown. When I look at the breakdowns, I see that we get history or frequency and no history. And
yeah.
I see that so often where I understand what you mean when you say sometimes they just pick and choose what they're going to get. But I always tell my students or people that I'm training, frequency and history are sisters, and they don't go anywhere without each other. If you're asking for frequency, you need to get history. I mean, there's just no way around it.
Yeah.
So, do you find that to be a common challenge or
definitely
overlooked? When a claim is denied due to frequency, there's nothing that drives me crazier than that. We didn't take the time to properly inform the patient of their costs.
Definitely. I had a client in California yesterday email me and say that they had submitted some services for a patient, and then it came back saying they were maxed out, and they didn't know that that patient was maxed out, but they didn't ask.
Oh.
So I go back to that basic training of like, did we ask about that on the insurance breakdown form? You know, and they're like, how do we?
So simple.
Such a simple thing. Now that patient is frustrated and upset at you, whereas initially you would have been like, you're maxed out. you're going to pay full fee. Here's how much that fee is. And they accept it and they pay you instead of the fight backwards of like, yeah, your insurance is maxed out and you would have paid this either way. You just didn't know that ahead of time. So preparing them ahead of time is everything. They will accept the treatment. They're happy to do the treatment. They're happy to pay for that treatment. Yes. They just need to know ahead of time. They need to be able to plan and budget and all of those things. So having the breakdown and having those good estimates are so, so important.
Chart preparation is everything. I think I did an episode on that and it was called Chart Prep. I did a whole episode on how important it is to be prepared for the patient's visit because it plays into their experience and their experience leads to good or bad reviews on Google. And a lot of those reviews are driven from finances, right?
And yeah, definitely. Prepared that like 90%.
I know there's a, that's actual statistic, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So it is amazing. Okay. We have teased the audience with your appeal process. So talk to me a little bit about your appeal process. So you get a denial for, let's say, a buildup, because that's the common theme in all of these groups.
So common.
So let's talk about your appeal process when a buildup is denied or they want to incorporate the buildup into the fee of the crown. Walk us through your process because I know you have mentioned to me several times you're not nice.
And I'm not nice.
You're not nice. And you actually say you're mean. I'm mean and not nice.
I'm the boss. When I work with other offices, they are basically begging and pleading with the insurance company to please cover these services. So they will give documentation and say, please look, this really needed to be done. Can you please cover this? I am like, if you don't cover it, I will report you and I will take you down. Like,
I love it. I absolutely love it. Okay. So talk to us about how you take them down.
How I take them down. So yes, with the buildups and all those things, my first process is actually making sure that that initial claim is sent out correctly. If I have all my T's crossed and my I's dotted, right? It's so easy. My appeal process is, no, I already gave you everything that you need to process this claim in good faith by law that they are required to do. I'm not providing you any more documentation. And if you don't have this paid, then I will report you. And they pay it. Or if they don't, so I talk about this a lot. Insurance companies, I make a lot of friends on the inside of these insurance companies. And I can never name them, right? They still are inside these insurance companies and higher up. Insurance companies flag offices. This is like my biggest secret, I swear. They flag offices as to whether or not you can be bullied or whether or not you're not to mess with. So I tell offices, be a whistleblower. So the way that these insurance companies, all of them are doing it, it's all standard protocol to deny claims, delay claims, delete claims, all of those things. They will continue to do it as long as they don't get caught. So if you are whistleblowing them, they will more than happily flag you as an office to leave alone so that you don't report them and they can continue to do it to millions of other offices and just leave your office out.
Okay. So let's like park for a second. And then I just want to reiterate that because I have said that in the past and I have said AI is real. And insurance companies are monitoring the offices that send appeals in, whether you use my method or you use Tessina's method, they are monitoring whether or not you are appealing. And the offices that appeal more often are left alone. And I have said this before, so I'm so happy that you're reiterating that. And then walk us through a little bit more about how you know this. You know, I know you've had the conversations with the consultants, but talk to us a little bit more about how you came about all of this knowledge.
Yeah, definitely. Like I said, I like to make a lot of friends and I like to not be left unknown. So I've told a dentist specifically that if their staff is on the phone with an insurance company and they're getting kind of chatty, I'm like, Don't tell them not to do that. That's literally how I made all of my inside contacts.
Oh my gosh. I have a list of people on the inside. Since I was a dental administrator, I have a list. Now, a lot of those people are gone because of COVID and everything, but then you make new friends.
Then you make new friends and you'll say like who took your spot or who, and they'll sometimes if they leave, they'll dish more secrets to you than they could when they were in. So I actually love it when one leaves once in a while, because I'm like, hey, now tell me, you know, So talking with the dental consultants that do the reviews of your claims, I've made many a friends with them and have talked with them at length. They will tell you that they are not given everything that you submit. They're only given portions. And those digital x-rays, the insurance company prints them off and mails them over or faxes them over. So when you get that denial saying that that x-ray isn't readable, it's not because you did anything wrong. The insurance company intentionally printed that and mailed it to the consultant. And the consultant is saying to the insurance company, I can't read this. Dentist consultant is not even necessarily telling them to deny the claim. He's reporting back to the company that he can't read those x-rays. And that insurance company's like, sends us the denial saying, oh, they can't read the x-rays. You have to send an x-ray. But we already know we sent a good digital x-ray, right? And they're just playing games. I don't send them a new x-ray. Especially if I go and look at what I sent and it was good, I know they're playing games, and I give them one opportunity to clean up their act before I report them.
Yesterday, we talked about this and I had called you because I said, what do you do about your narratives? And we can talk a little bit more about this after the appeal process, but like that's how we kicked off the conversation, and somehow it turned into appeals. I think we talked about what we were going to talk about on the podcast. And you had mentioned that insurance companies are deleting claims. They are deleting attachments. Mm-hmm. And is that being done intentionally, or is that
100%?
100%. Okay. So talk to us a little bit about that.
So again, it's just about the fact that they do this as standard protocol in efforts to delay the claim or intentionally deny the claim. They do this so to better their numbers, right? It makes sense. And they do it to better their numbers. If they paid every single claim right away as soon as it came in, and even if they know they're going to pay it, but they want to pay it in 30 days instead of today, they have all of these tactics because that's the only way it actually produces more revenue for them. So aside from raising premiums on patients, which they will do with no problem, but they really don't want to do that too much because they worry about losing their clients. So more on the better end is to get as many clients as they can, keep that premium reasonable, and then delay, deny claims. That's how they get their money. That's how the game is played. And as long as they can get away with it, they can continue to do it. Even filing an appeal does let them know that, you know, hey, you're not doing this right. And if they pay that appeal, you have no reason to report them. So they are very likely to pay your appeal, even if your appeal isn't super fancy or anything. Just you sending that appeal saying something's wrong here, you should have paid this, they will usually get that paid, because the next step from that would be filing complaints, or there's this attention on them now and of what they know that they are illegally doing. And they don't want that attention brought to them. So filing that appeal is the first step. The insurance commissioner will ask you to file an appeal always before you send it to them, because you have to show proof that you did try to work it out with them first. So again, I think I'm kind of back and forth, but talking about how we know what's right for them to do and what's not right to do. I had lengthy discussions with the insurance commissioner, with the federal departments as to what the laws are. What are our rights? What are our laws? What is the insurance company allowed to do? What are they not allowed to do? What are we allowed to do? What are we not allowed to do? So when I battle it, I'm battling it very confidently, knowing that they're not allowed to do that. And also knowing, because I have those inside contacts, that they are doing that, right?
So that's deep. Oh my gosh, let's pause there. So knowing that what our rights are, yet knowing what they're also, the shenanigans they're playing on the inside. And so when you talk about laws, like you're talking about state laws.
And federal.
And federal.
And federal. It's
the federal universal with regards to the insurance commissioner. And does that apply to self-funded plans as well?
So the insurance commissioner doesn't necessarily follow the federal laws. They have their own state laws, but they do notice and recognize those federal laws and try to apply them as much as possible. Self-funded plans are federal plans. So the insurance, the state insurance commissioner does not have jurisdiction over them.
Yes.
We've talked about this before. When you submit a complaint to the insurance commissioner, if you tell them right off the bat that it's self-funded, they will reject it and say, we have no jurisdiction. But what I do.
Tell us everything.
You guys, you know, I'm not very nice. No.
I said she's a disruptor and I meant
I'm a disruptor. So I don't tell them it's a self-funded plan. And since I didn't give them that information, they send it. So the insurance companies have this specific high up department that handles these complaints. And their job is to get these complaints resolved as quick as possible so they're not in trouble. So since I don't disclose that it's a self-funded plan, they send it to that contact at that insurance company. And that contact looks at it and says, oh no, we've been flagged. Let me go look. Oh, it's a self-funded plan. And then replies back and says, you don't have jurisdiction. It's a self-funded plan. And I get a response from the insurance commissioner saying, this is a self-funded plan. I have no jurisdiction. Here's the number to contact for the federal department to file the complaint with them. So now I've done two things is I have already notified that high up contact who it's in their nature. Their whole job is to hurry and get
these
disputes.
Their whole purpose in life while they are on the clock is to resolve these complaints. Yes.
And I've got their attention on it now.
Right.
So, and they know they get a copy from that insurance commissioner, the same copy that I get that says, here's the number to go complain to the federal department. So that contact doesn't want me to follow that next step. I don't call the federal department right away. I wait 2 weeks and I usually have my payment.
This is so good. This is like all the tea. This is like all the things that we need to know to just cut to the chase, right? Like
cut to the chase.
We don't care if you're self-funded or not. We're just going to follow this process. So now that we know you have all the tricks up your sleeve and you just shared them, I know that you did an article in Dental Economics on this topic, and yes, it was, you had a huge response. Walk us through, if you can, and I want my listeners to pay attention. You guys need to get a pen and paper out because she's about to tell you step by step how to do this. So Tess, if you could just walk us through, I get a denial, walk me through step by step mm-hmm. what I need to do up to filing a federal complaint.
Yeah, definitely. So if I get that denial, and if it's me that had originally sent the claim, I know I had all my T's crossed, my I's dotted, so it's pretty easy. But I usually tell people, go and double check, especially if you have different people in the office submitting claims, go and check and make sure that you did have the proper documentation going out on that initial claim. So if that initial claim really didn't have that documentation, you can go ahead and provide that documentation. By law, you do have to show some proof of validity that that service needed to be done. The insurance companies are allotted that law to protect from dental offices taking advantage and just submitting claims for stuff that didn't really need to be done. So they are allotted that we have to show some proof that it really did need to be done. If that was missing on the initial claim, go ahead and send that with a warning that, hey, I'm sorry my initial claim was missing that. Here it is. Now you have everything that you need. Process the claim. And I always tell, or I report you, right?
So do you actually put that in the remarks section?
Yep.
Really? So definitely. It's, you know, here is the missing information. Mm-hmm. And now you have everything you need to process this claim.
And I don't say please process. I say process immediately for correct payment, or I will file a report with the insurance commissioner.
Very cool.
Yeah. And then if my denial comes in and I was successful in submitting the claim correctly, nothing is missing, my response to them, and it's not always an appeal. So I'll say this, sometimes because they're saying they need more information, an appeal is not necessarily the correct route. Right. So if it's a flat denial and you have to appeal it, make sure you're following the correct appeals process. And then the wording's going to be the same. The wording, whether you're doing an appeal or giving them the additional information they're asking for, that's going to be the same. But make sure you know if you're doing an appeal or just they're right. asking.
Say that you're appealing it.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. So if they're saying they need an appeal, make sure you're following the correct appeals process.
Right.
If they're not saying they need an appeal and they just need additional information or they're missing information, you don't technically have to have an appeal. You can just provide additional information or dispute that with them. So make sure you know which process you're following there. But either way, the dispute is not, here's a whole bunch more x-rays and an intraoral image and the clinical notes from the doctor and please pay this. Your response is, no, I already gave you everything that you need that shows proof of a clean, valid claim. I showed enough evidence. It's sufficient evidence is the wording. So I already showed sufficient evidence, that's the legal verbiage, of the treatment needing to be done. You have everything that you need. This is a clean, valid claim. Process this for payment.
Clean, valid claim. I love that.
Clean, valid claim. And if you don't process this immediately, I will file a complaint with the insurance commissioner. That's my response.
And so with that response, what is your turnaround time? Like when you, how often does this actually have to get taken to a higher level? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you find that at this point they will just pay it, or what do you think the percentage is before you?
Some act? Will. Yeah. So I will say this, because they're flagging you in the beginning, you're going to have more denials than acceptance. Right? They're going to be testing you. They want to call your bluff. Do you know how many offices say and threaten, like, I'm going to file a complaint and never do? A lot.
Right.
So if this is your first time doing it, I would expect it to not be super successful, and that's okay. What you're going to do is if they don't pay it, you're going to go ahead and file that complaint with the insurance commissioner. After doing one of those for each insurance company that is trying to push you around, they will flag you. They will say, okay, this office figured us out. They're a whistleblower. We need to back off. So here's how the legal part, or the part that the insurance commissioner does with them. If they pay the claim, once we submit that complaint, there is no negative action taken on the insurance company, because they have not been proven to do anything wrong. They can say it was an error, it was a glitch, it got slipped through the cracks, we've corrected it, therefore we're not at fault for anything.
Right.
Okay? Right.
And that's what they want.
That's what they want. So if they pay your claim when you file the complaint with the insurance commissioner, they're not in any trouble with the insurance commissioner. The insurance commissioner is aware of them, might be watching them, but they're not in any trouble as long as they pay it. So they're pretty much wanting to pay that. They're not wanting to get too many eyes. If the insurance company has multiple complaints from multiple offices or even from the same office, they can do an investigation and they can find the insurance company if they suspect that they are intentionally doing this on a large amount of claims, right? Across the board.
Right.
And they are.
What I wanted to interject here is, because I think this goes right in alignment with what you're talking about, I always encourage offices to monitor their denial patterns and, you know, keep those on file by insurance company. You're starting to see a lot of denials for buildup with Cigna, which I think Cigna and Guardian are the biggies right now. Keep those on file, but also make sure that you are appealing all of those. Mm-hmm. I told you yesterday, I have billers that I have conversations with who have literally given up on billing buildup at all, because I look at the utilization patterns within their coding profile. Mm-hmm. And I'll say, okay, I see that you did 650 crowns over the last 12 months, but I see no buildups. Are you guys not doing buildup, or what's going on there? Well, we stopped billing buildup because they don't get paid.
So I have something to add to that. So insurance companies decide what codes are covered by the utilization. If you're not billing it, They will say it doesn't need to be covered. The biggest mistake offices make is not billing it because they think it's not covered. That you're actually telling the insurance companies to continue not covering that service ever. So the
we're not
more
talking about a fluoride that's not covered due to age limitation, right?
Speaking of fluoride, back in the day, it didn't used to be covered even for children. For some of those that have been in the field for a really long time, we know that fluoride was never covered. And now we're seeing it covered on children. And that age limit has been going up and up and up. And the reason being is because more and more offices are submitting the fluoride treatment, even though it's denied for the age limitation. The insurance company is starting to see these patterns and starting to see the need for it to be covered or covered at a higher age.
And I think, you know, we just did a webinar together, what was about 2 weeks ago, and it was the Insurance Untangled webinar. I believe it was Jordan's mom that asked, why do insurance companies not increase maximums? And both of us had answers. My answer was about 7% of people that have PPO benefits use them. Only 7% of the population with PPO benefits actually use their benefits. And I learned this from Dr. Roy Shelburne. He and I did a workshop together at the beginning of the year. Then you also had something to add to that. So what was your answer to that?
So they're not, the offices aren't submitting their office fee.
There you go.
That's the problem. Oh, a big part of the problem. It's both, but they're not submitting the office fee. So if you're saying a crown is only $500, a filling is only $80, they're saying our maximum at $1,500 is totally fine. $1,000 or $1,500 is totally fine. It can cover this many services. If we show them that one crown is $1,000 or more, they know that they have to raise that maximum, that they won't be able to get any of their services done. We're just underutilizing. The biggest mistake is they're billing out what their contracted rate is instead of their office fee. So insurance companies aren't aware, and they're not billing codes that they think are not covered because they're like, what's the point? It's not covered. The point is the insurance company needs to know these things. They actually do need to see these things. Otherwise, they have no idea. We can't always blame them for everything. Some of it's our fault. If these guys aren't in dentistry, none of them do dentistry. None of them know anything about that. They're literally going off of patterns and they're watching what's normal, what's acceptable, what's not acceptable. And then they base their coverage off of that. If we're not telling them this is a needed service, if we're not telling them this is how much the service costs, how are they supposed to know?
And yes. And I mean, we've seen that progression with the introduction of new codes. Like, let's take gingival irrigation. For the longest time, it didn't even have a code. So we were using, I think it was like D9630 back in the day. We were using that as the irrigation code. And then we got the irrigation code and it was not covered by any plan. So now you're seeing reimbursement for that code. And I think that's where we need to educate our billers in helping everybody to understand that, you know, the more we educate the insurance companies, the more likely we're going to receive reimbursement at some point. Now, it's not going to be the best reimbursement, you guys. It's definitely not going to be, you know, you're not going to jump up for joy for sure. It's just one of those things that it's a two-way street. And I love that you said it's not always their fault. Sometimes it's our fault in how we manage our claims, putting our full fee on the claim form, and so much that we could definitely expand on. So with all of that being said, if anybody has any questions about this whole very unique appeal process, I love it. What are some of the keywords? Because you had actually mentioned that previously, that they're looking for keywords in a narrative, in an appeal. Talk to us a little bit about that.
The keywords, when you're submitting that initial claim, your narrative, we talked a little bit about this. It doesn't have to be a whole page. It doesn't have, again, we're not begging them to pay the service. We don't even have to explain to them all the details of the service, unless, okay, side note, if you do one of those that says like unspecified, then you do have to explain what you did.
Definitely.
if it's a crown, we don't have to explain that, right? They know what a crown is. So you're required by law to show sufficient evidence that needed to be done. This is done in two ways, an image and a narrative. So if your image doesn't show clearly why a crown needed to be done, then your narrative would need to state what additional information was missing in that image. So your narrative is getting scanned electronically. They're going to be looking for certain keywords, decay. That's like the biggest keyword they're looking for. Decay. Always say decay, decay, decay. Okay. Mm-hmm. Unless it didn't. But
yeah, I mean, as long as there is decay there.
As long as there's decay, say yes. Decay. If there is decay and fractures, be mindful of which insurance company you're dealing with. Delta Dental has this big deal. They do not do crowns for fractures.
Not at all.
So if they scan the keyword fractures and ignore the decay, you're going to get a denial. Yep. So leave fractures off of there. Just put the decay. It had enough recurrent decay, and then you know that there was also fractures. But I do often try to say if there was decay and fractures, I put that. If it was decay and it was broken, I put that. Mm-hmm. So just those very little things. And then if it's a buildup, they are looking for specifically that it lost more than 50% tooth structure. So if your initial claim says lost 50% of tooth structure, and also that the buildup was required for crown retention. So I add that as well, that it was required for crown retention. All of my narratives say required. Mm-hmm. So if it's a crown, it's due to decay and broken, required a crown. That's my narrative.
You right. guys, I look like a bobblehead right now because I am just shaking and like I'm shaking my head in agreement with everything Tessina is saying. And I just realized I've been bobbing my head the whole time we've been talking.
I do that too.
I'm like a bobblehead over here.
Yeah, I do that all the time. So I'm glad I'm not being alone. I get all excited. I'm like, yes.
I know. Like we get so excited. Yesterday I texted you and I was like, do you have 2 minutes to chat? And then I remember when I sent that, I was like, it's not going to be 2 minutes. It's just
minutes. I know.
And yeah, it turned into like 20. And today we said we're going to do a podcast and we've just gone on so many tangents, but such good information, Tessina. I definitely want to have you back on the podcast. We can talk about so many other things. You're just like a big wealth of billing knowledge. I love all of the information you just shared with us. It's very informative. Do you believe in using appeal templates? Because I see people that say, I have an appeal letter for this. I have an appeal for that. Let's talk about that just really quick. Let's talk finally about appeal templates, because I am not a fan of using templates with appeals. Talk Agreed. To me a little bit about how you do that.
Yeah, I agree 100%. Each situation is a little bit unique. So it's really hard to have that template. And again, the reason they have this big, huge template is because they're trying to make sure they have all this wording in there and their appeal is like a whole page long. My appeal's not that long.
Right.
My appeal's not that long and I don't really need a template. I will usually point out the legal actions that I believe that they are taking and again, tell them that I already provided a clean, valid claim with sufficient evidence mm-hmm. and that if they don't pay it, I'm going to report them. I don't do a template because I have to go look through my notes and see what it is specifically, what laws that they're breaking. They're not allowed to diagnose treatment. That's illegal. They're not allowed to delay claims for payment by asking for additional x-rays or additional information.
Assuming you sent everything initially, right?
Yes.
So you're saying yep. I already sent that to you. I'm not.
And they say, you give them a bite wing and they're like, we want a PA. We need a post-op PA. No. We're not asking for tons and tons of information. I already showed sufficient evidence.
Evidence that the procedure was necessary.
Yes.
And they are obligated by law to pay that claim in good faith.
In good faith. They have to take your word for it. So if the x-ray doesn't show, but you state in your narrative why it needed it, they have to take your word for it now because they required by law to process it in good faith that you're telling the truth with that sufficient evidence. That's if they're asking for tons and tons of more documentation or saying they didn't get it, send it again. This is an indication that they are intentionally delaying the claim for payment, which is illegal. So if they're denying a claim for a covered service saying it didn't need to be done, this is where I say sometimes it can be two. One, they're illegally diagnosing treatment. And two, It's actually illegal for them to deny a covered service on a clean, valid claim. So they're illegally denying and illegally diagnosing treatment. Those are the two things. My narrative, my appeal is going to point out you're illegally diagnosing treatment. You're illegally delaying the claim for payment. If you don't have this process immediately for correct payment, I will report you. Also using those.
You're saying you're going to report them to the insurance commissioner.
Insurance commissioner. And I specifically do state the insurance commissioner. Sometimes I'll say insurance commissioner or federal department, whichever applies. So I might say that even. But I do make sure they know that I will file a complaint. That's my next step. A lot of times I'll say this is my final attempt. This is my last attempt to work it out with you.
Okay.
So, because a lot of insurance companies will have three levels of appeals you can do with them. Don't do three levels of appeals. And so if you send one appeal and they think you still have two more, I say clearly, this is my final attempt to work it out with you. If you don't have it paid, I will report you.
That is such gold, because I have listeners and I know that we have people who are listening going, I have submitted this appeal like 8 times and I keep going back and forth. So for those of you that have denied claims and you have been going back and forth with the insurance company, don't do that. Send a notice to the insurance company. This is my final attempt before I file a complaint with the insurance commissioner.
Yeah. And you're going to get some of those coming back initially. They might try to call your bluff. That's okay. Let them. And then show them you weren't bluffing, right? and then they'll start backing off.
Okay. So then to file the complaint with the insurance commissioner is to go to your state insurance commissioner website. So I'm in California. I go to the California insurance commissioner's website.
Yes. You can Google it. You can Google Insurance Commissioner of California, and it will pop up with the website.
And you just follow the prompts.
Find the spot that says file a complaint, right? Mm-hmm. There's going to be a spot on the website where you can do all these things with your insurance commissioner's department. So you're going to find the spot that's going to say, like, I want to file a complaint, and then start following those prompts. Yeah, and it takes 5 minutes.
We're not going to go back and forth with the insurance companies anymore. Nope. We are going to give them one opportunity to pay the claim. And if they don't, we're not going to do all three levels of the appeal process. We're going to go, okay, we gave you a chance. You didn't pay in good faith because we gave you a proper narrative explaining why the treatment was necessary. We even gave you an x-ray showing why it was necessary. And you still have not processed this claim in good faith. I'm going to file a complaint with the insurance commissioner. So then you go to your state's insurance commissioner, file the complaint. And from there, what do? We just wait for a response from the insurance commissioner?
Yep. The insurance commissioner will call or email you back, letting you know that they received that complaint and that they're working on it. Sometimes they'll ask you some additional information of like, what have you been seeing? You have a spot to upload all of your documentation. Right. So you want to definitely make sure you upload as much documentation, communications, everything that you've sent the insurance, all of that over so that they have everything that they need and the insurance company doesn't get a chance to hide it from them. So you want to submit all that, but sometimes they'll ask you some additional questions. Also, side fun note, you can, I love a lot of these. I don't know, people probably should be seeing now recently, Delta Dental is not combining the x-rays with the bite wings anymore. This is because of the insurance commissioner's office in Washington. So all of those providers in Washington were sending complaints about Delta Dental bundling these. So even though it was in their contract, even though it was not like you can send a complaint about that and the insurance commissioner will say, I can't actually get coverage on that for you because it's in their contract. You agreed to it. But they complained so much and threw such a fit that the insurance commissioner went and talked to Delta Dental to say, what's going on here? What are you guys doing? This doesn't follow ADA guidelines. This doesn't follow this or that. Delta Dental had to make a change nationwide. Every one of us is benefiting from the providers in Delta of Washington complaining against Delta Dental.
To the insurance commissioner.
Of their state. So even though it was just of that state, we had nationwide changes for that. And we're so grateful. By the way, shout out to anybody who's in Washington.
Yes. Thank you, ADA Washington, in the Washington area.
Yeah. So file those complaints. Let them know. Bring it to the attention of the insurance commissioner.
So your way of learning all of this is a very unique way. And I know it was in an effort to catch up and you thought you were behind and then you realized, oh my gosh, I'm way ahead of most billers that don't understand the appeal process properly. You also took a course and you were given templates. And talk to us about this course you took without naming any names, but you know, this course you took. And then that phone call you got from the insurance commissioner.
Oh, I was so embarrassed. So again, my learning process, and I don't play the games. Obviously, you guys are seeing that. I'm not playing the game. I'm not going back and forth. I want to know my laws and I'm going to hold you to it. In finding this out, and I'm trying to go to all these continuing education, all these courses, my doctor paid $1,000, I think it was. This is a long time ago. It still is a lot of money, but $1,000 to go to this course, this seminar, where they were talking to me and teaching me about how to use the insurance commissioner. And it was very limited, detailed information, even in that seminar, but they did provide to us a packet and templates for how to, and instructions for how to file a complaint with the insurance commissioner. It was this big letter and it had a, I think it said like, you can copy the patient to it and this letter. And here was the envelope with an address of where to send it. So I was so excited. I couldn't wait to use it. And I got a denial. And I was like, I'm going to put these guys into the fire and I'm going to write this paper. Anyways, I mailed it out to my insurance commissioner and they called me and they said, what are you doing? Are you trying? Are you trying to submit a complaint? Like, this isn't how you do it at all. I was like,
you're trying to file a complaint, but you are not doing it right.
You're failing miserably. Like, you're failing. This is not how you do it.
So that, I mean, I wanted to bring that up because how many billers are using these templates that are being thrown around in these Facebook groups?
Oh, I've got a template
for that. Also, when we use the same template for every appeal, that could also trigger an audit, can also trigger the wrong type of attention because, wait a minute, how did the last five SRP denials need the same treatment for the same reason? And it looks like the same letter every single time. I'm not a fan of that. I am just not a fan. I am a fan of telling the story uniquely to help the insurance company understand that this treatment was necessary, but I am not going to tell a lengthy story. I, like you, will use key words. Mm-hmm. Get to the point. Just get to the point. Everything we talked about today, it's just like this could have been a whole workshop.
Yeah.
This episode by itself. You friends, I hope everybody took notes. And if you didn't, go back and listen to this episode again or reach out to Tessina. Her email, her contact information is going to be in the show notes. Tessina, this has been so much fun.
And so much fun.
This, I'm definitely going to have you back. I don't know, maybe we'll do a series of something or other, but I think helping my audience to navigate through the appeal process. I want to share a fun statistic with you. In 2017, less than 33% of all denials were ever appealed.
Oh my gosh.
So the insurance companies are winning, right?
Yeah.
They're winning because we're not filing complaints. Insurance commissioners are there to help us to advocate for dentists and patients, mainly for the patients. Like they're not going to do it because they don't know how to do it. And I have hosted workshops all over the country. And I will tell you, just I have spoken to so many billers who are like, well, I don't know how to do the appeal process.
Yeah.
And it's not because they don't want to, it's because they don't know. So after listening to this episode, friends, you have the framework to do an appeal. Even if you still need to, you know, you're going to be like a fish out of water initially, but it'll become more natural and your office will be flagged as a whistleblower, which is what you want. You want insurance companies to think of you as a whistleblower. They're not going to give us so many denials. So Tessina, thank you so much for all of this information.
Definitely.
I look forward to having you back on the podcast.
I'm excited. Anytime.
Okay, my friends, that's going to wrap up today's episode on the Dental Billing Podcast. I can't wait until the next episode, and I hope that you join me. Until then, take care.